Magic,
and the world of illusion.
Magic TV
and Craig Petty proudly present the Talk Magic Podcast. Every week we bring you awesome interviews with the greatest magicians that have ever lived. And now, here's your host, Craig Petty.
Welcome back to Magic TV. My name's Craig. It's 9 o'clock, which means it's time for a Talk Magic. And today I'm talking to one of the hottest names in magic right now. This guy is everywhere. This is the person that everyone's speaking about. He's worked with Illusionist, which is like the dream of several people. He had arguably the trick of the convention, Blackpool 2023, and he is just on fire. Super excited to get him on the channel because we want to find out all about what makes him tick. A lot of people that I respect say he's one of the most creative people in magic right now. I am, of course, talking about the one and only Mr. James Keatley. How are you doing, James? You all right, mate?
I'm good, Craig. How are you doing, mate?
Hey, I'm excited to have you on the channel.
Thank you, mate. I'm excited to be here. Like, really, really stoked. Just great to be here and chatting, mate.
And you know what? What I just said is absolutely true. You know, one of my best friends in magic is Nemid Phoenix. And I was speaking to him the other day and he's like, oh my God, James is just so creative. He told me a story about outside the Ruskin at Blackpool, you were taking stuff just off tables and creating tricks there at the Ruskin, just like in front of him. And this is a guy that's been there, done that, bought the t-shirt, and he considers you to be one of the most creative people he's ever met. So, I mean,
Mate, first of all, I met Nemid at the session, and like, we're just randomly, I didn't even know your link or combination. We just started chatting, and then I think you come over and said, oh yeah, but what a nice guy. What a lovely, like, really nice guy. What a performer as well. With him, and he showed me some absolutely amazing. So I think Nemid is a highly creative guy himself. I think we're going to see stuff from them in the future, but he's amazing. Really nice guy.
Incredible performer. But here's the thing. One of the reasons I want to get you on the channel, I wanted to speak to you, is because you are living proof that you don't, right, there's certain things that are said in magic. You have to be a full-time magician to be taken seriously. You have to be a performer to be taken seriously. You have to have been in magic since the age of 3 since to be taken seriously. And you buck all of those trends. You've only been in magic for a few years, comparatively speaking. You're more of a creator than a performer, and you're not full-time. You do other stuff as well, but you're still carving out a name for yourself as one of the most creative guys in the industry. So it's amazing because you inspire, I know you do, James, you inspire so many people and you show so many people, hey, you don't have to be the person that everyone considers you have to be in order to make it in this industry. Yeah. That's not the case. And I love that. I love that so much.
Yeah, I mean, we can get into it in more detail, but part of my back journey and the thing that sort of comes into my magic creation is the stuff I do outside of magic. I would say that is just as important as the stuff I learn inside of magic, if that kind of makes sense. We can get in more detail. I have desires to do more in magic, but at the same time, I don't think magic will ever be a full-time profession for me. I have more aspirations to learn more about performing, and I have made certain steps and progressions. You can enjoy magic as a hobbyist, an enthusiast, an amateur, someone who likes to. I'm not too keen on the word creator. I don't think it's a bad thing to say I want to be a creator, but I think you should just create magic. I think that's a bit of a philosophy I have. I think that's more beneficial for people getting into magic, younger people thinking about creating. Just enjoy magic and create magic. You'll become a creator if you create. So by definition, if you make something, you're a creator. So don't worry about the title or what, just make magic. So yeah, that's really
cool. Let's get into this. For people who don't know your whole story, and I don't, to be honest, so it's going to be really interesting to hear this. How did you get into magic? What's your origin story? You know, because I know that you've not been in magic. It's not your typical, so many people on this channel, when I interview them, they go, Well, my uncle pulled a coin from behind my ear when I was 5 years old, and at that point I was hooked. Or Paul Daniel's magic set was brought to me when I was, and it's always the same thing.
I've got a lot of those cliches in this story, but they're probably more phased out than the average magician, maybe. So
bring it on, I want to hear it all.
So basically, from a young child, I've always been obsessed with art, making things, drawing, painting. When I was a young child, I'd take paper clips and blue tack and make models. You know, just an obsession with things. I used to love rappers, and I used to play pranks on my dad on wrapping Club Biscuits and then putting them back together and hiding them in the cupboard and thinking it was hilarious. You know, pre-YouTube, pre-internet, you know, just pranks, and used to go to joke shops, that type of thing on holiday. So I used to love that type of thing, but always been obsessed with crafting. And that's something that's followed me all through my life. So over my life, I've done many crafts, many skills, just love research things. I'm not really into football, like soccer, if anyone in America's watching. And I'd say in the UK, that would occupy the average person quite a lot. So I always used to have floating hobbies, and just try new things and go to different craft shops, go to workshops, and just that's kind of one of my interests in life. And then I've had varied jobs. So for many years I run a construction company, and during that time I've worked in factories, learned many processes, carpentry, electronics. So I'm sort of like a general sort of all-purpose sort of builder in knowledge. And that really helps in obviously what I do. So, and then on top of that, alongside the construction, I worked for 10 years as a consultant and as a tutor for the Tennis Foundation. Mm-hmm. So that really has affected magic. One, that was where I first, when we get to it, where I first introduced magic as a performance. But two, that was not sort of the higher end of tennis. I was involved in grassroots, so writing programs for schools. And for community groups across the UK and then international. And that involved like doing work with other partners, creating programs and where to work with teenagers and primary schools. So I've got quite a lot of experience outside of magic in sort of a delivery and a performance and a creation side, you know, creating games and programs and putting all that together as individually and as part of a team. So that's sort of like what I do outside of magic. And then the typical thing happened. As I was growing up, I remember my cousin had showed me a magic trick. He showed me two when I was about eight. He showed me a coin vanish, which was, I think, the hook coin. Mm-hmm. And wouldn't tell me how he did it for months. And he also showed me a thing he used to take to the pub, which was like a Perspex case where you put a note in with a padlock and you had six keys. Mm-hmm. And you had five keys. And no matter what, the one key that he had would always open the padlock and he'd get to keep the money. So, and I begged him for ages to tell me how these things worked. So I was about eight or nine. And eventually he did, he told me, like he caved and he actually told me the secret. Didn't have a copy of them, but that stayed in my mind that there was a method behind magic. So I used to love watching Paul Daniels. I did have a Paul Daniels magic set when I was, again, about 9 or 10. So it's somewhere around there. I remember the only thing I liked in it was a paperclip thing. It was the only thing that seemed like it was a real prop or a real thing. Oh, and a rubber band trick, you know, the old one where you have it on the two fingers and it mm-hmm. goes down. I remember learning that. And then really that was it. Apart from crafting, nothing really in magic. And then started getting liking magic. Dynamo was a huge influence for me and my kids. So we used to sit and watch Dynamo together, and that really sort of like got magic into our life. And then the typical thing happened, my son wanted to do a bit of magic. So because my cousin had showed me the trick, I knew that there was magic shop somewhere. So I did a bit of research and found a brick and mortar magic shop, which was Magic Tao.
Okay. Yeah.
So my first ever brick and mortar magic shop I walked into was Taya. So I went.
First experience.
So my first experience was walking into Taya. Costas was the guy I first met when I went in. I come out of, so basically went in, so the typical thing, I'm looking for some magic for my son, which is honestly true. I ended up with a couple of card decks, a copy of Royal Road to Card Magic and Ninja. The Illusionist DVD, I believe. for my son, because he was really interested in cards. But he showed me a couple of tricks. He showed me, which I did, at the time I didn't know, but I think it's Paul Harris presents, it's that key ring, where it's you have multiple outs. I don't want to talk about
yes. I'm a key fob, and yeah.
So he showed me that, but then, and the traveling deck by Takao, which is like vanishing deck used by Dynamo on the TV on one of the specials. So he showed me those two tricks, but he showed me the methods to the tricks, and I brought those. No, I brought the traveling deck. I didn't buy fair play, but the instant he showed me the methods, it was like a light bulb going off in my head. It was like years and years of crafting knowledge and everything else. It's like, oh my, there's a use for all this like randomness, like taking wrappers apart. And it's like, so that was the eureka moment. So I went home, and that day, Craig, I invented my first magic trick. That magic trick is still not released, but I'm not sure where it is at the moment, because it was with a company. It was sort of, then it was sort of on the fringe of maybe being on something. And I don't know where it is at the moment, but that was the first ever thing that happened. But it was literally on the way home from the magic shop. And by the time I got home, I'd created the trick and sort of mocked it up. So that was it, really. That was the eureka moment for me. It just sort of all started from there. So that was December 2014 when I first went into the shop.
So December 2014, you found a magic shop, you've started buying tricks. You've created your own trick, but I mean, as much knowledge as you have on crafting and tinkering around with stuff, you have no magical knowledge. You have no knowledge about anything to do with magic whatsoever. So I suppose before we go on with this story, my first question is, how the hell did you create a magic trick when you have no knowledge about magic or sleights or principles or anything, and you come up with a trick? I mean, that's incredible.
Because I've been watching magic and I'd seen magic. So the magic has a premise, like it's a plot, it has a story, a beginning, a middle, and an end. So to me, it was just, okay, so if you can use something to get an effect, if like an illusion or a twist, then that was how you create magic. I don't know. I mean, that's obviously my viewpoint now has drastically changed from that original moment. But
no, it's so impressive. So what happened at that point? So now we can safely say that the bug has bit.
Yeah.
Did you, like, I mean, you went back and you created a magic trick. Brilliant. But what was the next, you know, period of time like? Were you immersing yourself in learning principles and in learning moves and in learning sleights? Or were you still trying to create magic? Like, where were you from that point on?
Just going to, it's because I've written down the journey.
I just want to say congratulations, James Keatley, for winning the award for the most organized person I've interviewed on Magic TV to this point. You've actually got notes. This is incredible.
Yeah.
I love this.
Compensate for my lack of memory sometimes, or for stumbling. But no, so after that, I remember the Christmas, Charlie got these cards, my son, and like I remember having the traveling deck and like showing people, and it just blew me away. So I basically just did what every person who probably gets into magic did. I immersed myself in magic, especially for the first like 2 years. The first 3 years in magic, I probably studied to a PhD level, you know, past masters and got a PhD if in hours. I just immersed myself. I started going into Tao, like straight in the new year, got a few different things. I'd start like when I had spare time hanging around the store. So I got to see things being made. I mean, you probably went into the Tao there. It was a nice setup.
Well, actually, I didn't. Right. And the reason I didn't is because I worked with Costas at World Magic Shop. I don't know if you know this, but Costas used to run World Magic Shop before David Benn came in. And didn't really see eye to eye at the best of times. And then shortly after, before he started Magic Tao, I left the community for about 10 years. And didn't want anything to do with magic, magicians, or magic shops. So I never went in. I heard stories about
magic. So I'm sort of aware now of the full history and listening to people at the time, like, again, I didn't know. So I started going into the shop. They obviously created magic there. They were a producer as well as stocking certain magic from Murphy's. But while I was going into the shop, I got to meet Chris Congreve, Chris Webb, Chris Commander, who like actually helped me with my first couple of releases. So it was actually, and I got to see my first couple of like magic lectures there. So, you know, and got to see an awful lot of magic, you know. Typical thing, I was in the store quite a bit, so I got to like see projects being filmed, add a few like touches and collaborate, you know, just do a few little things. I remember a few Danny Weiser tricks like that to work on. It was quite cool. So it was a positive experience in one respect. And I did release two effects that I'm not sure if you're aware of, but through Magic Tower. So
no, I wasn't even in magic. So
this is, I would consider, so the first 2 years I consider my tail period. So I had my first release, which was very early, within the first 6 months of being in magic. And I don't really mess with cards now, but the first 2 years of magic did a lot of card magic stuff. So I had a release with Tao called Bazinga Box. It's discontinued now. It's something that I'll look at again maybe in the future. But very proud of that. It was a great project. Chris Commander worked with me on that at the time, because I was new into magic. So although I had ideas and routines, he helped me actually put them together and deliver the tutorial and the performances. And some really good live performances, I might add, on that. I was really, really proud of that. Although I was very new into magic and had little control over, didn't know what it was really for, the industry, if that makes sense. I was just someone wanting to, I've been into the shop and I showed them the idea and they wanted to put it out.
So very quickly, before you tell me about the second trick.
Yeah.
And it's really interesting because I respect you so much as a creator, I really do. And as you know, I've said on this channel in the past, that, you know, if you want to be a creator, you need to get a little bit of experience under your belt first, because more methods and principles and knowledge that you have, the better the trick's going to be. Any trick that's ever been created, if you give it 5 years and have 5 years of experience, it will become a better trick.
Yes.
One of the big problems if you release a trick 6 months being into magic is you've got the potential of it being something that's been done before, because you're not very well read 6 months into magic. So it might be something, or it might. So my question is, how did you navigate that? And what made you want to create and release a magic trick? Now, I know you said, hey, you got drawn towards the creating side of things with magic.
Yes.
So what made you go and actually release that as a physical product? You know, there's a difference between going home and creating a trick for yourself and going, right, I've got this, now I'm going to send this out to the wider world. So I find it really interesting, because I don't think I've ever met anyone that released a magic trick so early into their magic career. So it's really interesting, A, what your motivation was for actually doing that, because it was the right thing to do. Looking now, 9 years removed, you know, you're like I said at the beginning, you're one of the top creators in the industry. But what was your motivation for doing that 6 months in? And did you find that the lack of experience that you had made it difficult to make it? You said you were proud of it, so I guess not. So, you know, because a lot of people that are going to be listening to this that are very new to magic, and I find this subject fascinating. Is that all right, James, if we can talk about that?
No, it's not a problem. So as regards release on my first release, I didn't, at that point, I wasn't creating magic to release. There was no intention to release magic. I was just making magic and going into a shop and showing ideas on magic I'd come up with. Okay. That was where I was at 6 months in. I was studying like anyone's belief. I was starting to see patterns and trends, and like I do have run businesses, so I'm very much like look at things like companies and people and try and track and see who like the people I'd like to work with are. So I was starting that process at that point, but didn't really have any aspirations to release magic with the first sort of year, 2 years, that wasn't the intention. I showed the original trick, so I can say this now, the original trick that I actually that I showed at Tao was actually the exact same gimmick as Wonderbox by Sans Minds. It was the exact same gimmick prior to Wonderbox hadn't been released. That was the gimmick at the time. So it was a card box gimmick. But so I'd submit that they wanted to release it. Then Wonderbox came out, and I went to them and said, like, oh, this has came out, like, sans mine. So it's like, you can't release that. Like, because I didn't know the process of releasing at this time. I just knew this company wanted to release this trick. I was spending a lot of time there, so, you know, seeing a lot of things. So it seemed like, okay, you know, I don't know. I knew there'd be a financial thing, but at this point, I didn't think it was worth asking, like, yeah, for this trick. I could see the benefit of doing the trick. So then Wonderbox came out. But anyway, so they said, I got a message from Taylor saying, what, we think it's okay, blah, blah, blah. I said, well, leave it with me. I want to see what I can come up with. And I went away and I actually redesigned the whole thing. So it was nothing to do with a card box. And it was a removable gimmick that you could use with a card box or a card. So it became a completely different trick. And that was the one version that was released. But I did have quite a lot of routine ideas just from watching other projects. It was based off of, now I know this, that it's basically the traveling deck and Paul Harris's vanishing deck principle. But it's a different, now I've seen it, it's a completely different gimmick to all of those because of how it works. It was a very practical solution to that gimmick, not a very visual one, a practical one. But the main presentation was the cards disappear in the card box while you're holding them under the light heavy illusion. And they're signed cards, the cards that's left, everything's clean. So that was actually the reason I wanted to put it out, because it was a practical version of that effect. So yeah, that's why I'm really proud of it. And Chris Commander was a semi-pro magician, an actor. And when we spent some time together, we come up with like a couple of routines. One of them we went out and filmed and it got great reactions. He was a worker. He covered the deck switching element. So yeah, I was really proud that it was a polished product, really well shot. So yeah, it ended up being a good release.
That's great. So off the back of that, did you then kind of think, right, that's awesome, that's fantastic, I really like this, I've made a bit of money, I've released the trick, I've created this trick.
I never had no money off that at all. I got, like I said, I was spending time at Tao, didn't know much about the industry at this point.
Hang on, just 1 minute.
Yeah,
so you released this trick through the company, it's your trick, you went there, you filmed it, you did all of this stuff, you had this physical product, and they never paid you a penny for it.
No, I got some free magic and stuff. That at the time I was happy. There was no ever any discussion on that one, Craig. Nothing was ever discussed, asked, brought up. So yeah.
Wow.
That's that.
I've heard stories, but you know.
It is what it is. So that was the first release, but I'm proud of the release. It was a good release. I didn't realise, but I have had people, like recently David Jonathan actually mentioned that trick to me in a chat. I was like, wow, like, you know, and so he said your Magic Tao days to me, actually. He said, I remember you back from there. So I thought that was a real big compliment.
Okay, so then you went and released another trick with Magic Tao.
So I did have one more release with Tao. There's a bit of an overlap there at that point. I'm not going to get too much into the history of Tao, I don't think, but like I did release another trick with Tao, but at that point I'd also started chatting to Mark at Saturn Magic. So I had one, my second release was with Tao, but it actually was released slightly after my release with Saturn. And that was, I can tell you when that was, just for things. So Blackpool. So Blackpool 2016 was my first ever Blackpool, and Bazinga Box was there. Blackpool 2017. So after Blackpool 2016, I'd started going over to see Mark at Saturn every now and then. Okay. Really got on well with Mark. We just go and chat, show him a few ideas, and we just jam out a few ideas, and he'd show me things he was working on. We'd just have, you know, discussions. It was closest to where I am. You know, it's about a 40-minute drive, So it was nice to pop over. And at that point, I just wanted to try a different shop and speak to other people and just broaden my magic. So started chatting with Mark, showed him a couple of ideas, and we actually released Juicy, which is a product you've actually reviewed.
Juicy is amazing. Juicy is really good. I love Juicy. I think it's great. Didn't realise that with you, actually. didn't connect the dots. I probably didn't realise at the time of the review, but didn't realise. That's a great trick.
That's a great trick.
So what was the desire to move to Saturn? Was it just like, hey, I'm gonna try? At this point, when you released this with Saturn, were you now kind of thinking, okay, this is now a potential income stream for yourself? Like, oh, because this is like your third release, right? So you bought a second trick out.
I called Juicy was my second release, although I'd say the second release with Teo was actually my second release, because that's the project I'd worked on prior to Juicy. When I was at, I actually went to the stand at Saturn when that was released, Juicy, and CGI had just been finished, like ready to make, and I Costas gave me a copy, and I actually was going to meet Eric Jones. So I actually took that over to Eric, and he did a little filming of it on his table for me. So that's what I said, there's a bit of an overlap there. But CGI was quite a big one. It was released as an exclusive through Penguin first. And that was the, I don't know if you remember, it's very much a social media trick, not a live performance trick, but it was the Rubik's Cube from Card.
You remember that, yeah.
Yeah, it went around the social media world quite well. So that was that, and that was an exclusive through Penguin, and then I believe it went into Murphy's after. I think that's still available. It's a good set, it's a great set, like, but it is a social media trick. In hindsight, I possibly would have liked that to have been a download, but now I'm not too keen on downloads, because I think the way they're going with piracy and stuff, it's not really a good market to get into. So that was CGI. So CGI was great in hindsight. Maybe I'm proud of it, but it was a great trick. The visual is stunning, and there was some things I added to that, but there was other stuff at the time that I wasn't aware about that was quite similar. So in hindsight, maybe CGI I do regret a little bit, but I think the product is fantastic, like, for what it is.
Did you get paid for that one?
Yeah, after a lot of that's when I started to realise, not about making money, but about getting contracts and stuff like that sorted for, like, terms and, you know, years and how much and your royalties or what the deal was. And I didn't get much response at first. I did get a small amount off that, but that's by the by. So anyway, I enjoyed my experience at Teo for the foremost. But yeah, there was cracks in Teo that become a bit more obvious than more people have spoken to. So anyway, at that point, decided to do a bit more with Saturn, and that's where Juicy happened. And Juicy was great. We didn't really make many copies of it. So, again, people say, are you starting to make money? I think we did a small run of that. It wasn't highly successful. It sold over a period of years. But if you was to, people say, do you make much money in magic with a release like that? If I was to add in the time, the R&D, go in, the materials, the setup, that it would be a minus, 100% be a minus. And a lot of tricks, I think, as well.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
We can talk on this, like, I'd like to talk on this from the creation side, is the business of magic creation. I don't think people cost their time. I don't think creators get house. But I work construction, so I would estimate and price jobs a certain way that cover my time as well as materials and things. I don't think people do that in magic enough, especially younger creators. They haven't got the business set up to actually... Which is why I think create magic. Don't be a creator till you've learned how to be a creator.
Yeah. I definitely want to talk about that. But before we carry on with the story and the timeline, one thing we've not mentioned up until this point is performance. Were you interested in performing and going out and doing gigs, or was it more the creating side of things that you were gravitating towards?
So a mixture. So study-wise, creation is something I definitely gravitate towards and making things, but that would happen whether I was doing magic or not, because I've got other crafting hobbies in, you know, going on at present. But I was studying all aspects of magic, so I'm probably more of a coin guy, I would say. I'm an anything but cards guy, I would say at present. I do love card magic, though. But I would sit and study. So I'll sit and study Danny Goldsmith, Eric Jones, if I want to relax and do some coin stuff. But I'm not performing that type of coin magic. That's for relaxation and development. I do so really performance wise, what I was doing was taking magic and adding it into what I was doing elsewhere. So I was going to, for instance, do a tennis course. I'd have 30 adult students in front of me. I'd be like, you know, high energy. Hi, guys. Right. We're going to get started. But before we start, we're going to play a quick game. It's a game you get to make. And I'd do Inferno, reveal the card. And then the next second, right, everyone go grab a racket and get back over here. So it was just adding in magic into other stuff as like icebreakers. I'd use magic when I was working with kids. If like they cry. Or they fell over, I'd grab out a flipper coin, you know, how many coins? No, you know, 2 coins, 1 coin, no coin, or rubber band trick, just to, you know, and they'd just stop crying. So that was really, that's my style of performance. I love Dynamo. I love that style of TV magic. So a lot of the magic I try and create, although I like to create four different genres and different styles of magic, but in my world, my perfect tricks are like the Dynamo style tricks. Randomness, you know, if the props could be on the table and left for a few hours and then hey mate, just random magic. So I study everything to a point, even stuff that I'm not too keen on, because I think you can learn principles from stuff that you might not like the performance style, but there could be some key stuff in there that you could learn.
I completely agree. And have you, as you've moved on and you've progressed in magic, as we carry on with the timeline, have you wanted to go out and do actual gigs, or is that something that do you prefer to perform sort of socially and to friends and family? Because there's nothing wrong with that. I think that the industry puts a big emphasis on you can't be considered a serious magician unless you go out and perform and get paid for it. And I've always made the point that I disagree, because the second you start making money from magic and the second your income is dependent on going out and performing, that's when you suddenly start compromising the magic that you perform. You know, No magician really wants to do ambitious card. It's done over and over and over and over again because you just know it's going to work. So there's nothing wrong with that. I just wondered, is it anything that you've ever wanted to do?
So I think I've mentioned this to you before, Craig, and definitely Lloyd and other people, a bit of the imposter syndrome. So obviously, as someone who's created magic and put it out, but not a performing magician, I've been around, and in my brief magic history, I've been blessed and lucky enough to spend some time with some great performers, you know, really, really great performers of magic, which, you know, from someone learning and gaining confidence can be, you know, you can see someone, wow, you either inspire to be like that or it can put you off completely. So I do have a bit of an imposter thing there. So what I'm doing is I practice sleight of hand and I practice performing. As I'm now releasing more stuff, I have had a standard black ball for 2 years. So I've been in the trenches in regards to performing to magicians for 3 days over and over and over. That really helped. And prior to Bitcoin, I actually started doing some unpaid gigs, just local restaurants, just to get experience. But what I've also done is I've recently joined, I'm not sure I think I can say that I've recently joined and been accepted as an apprentice, not a member, an apprentice of a magic society. And that involves obviously an exam and then different stages you have to do a performance exam. So I'm using that as part of my progression, like I would in a job, like training. That's how I see that. So because that's marked and it has criteria. So I'm sort of at that point where I have performed magic. But I actually went to perform last weekend with Harry Harrington, one of his residencies. Met him and I did some magic in the bar there to try out some ideas and actually try and group some tricks together to see how that felt. And it was, like you say, it was a completely different experience to just doing one-off tricks or setting things up more sort of organically. So I'm working on that and enjoy it. But I think where I am is trying to find a performance style that I actually feel comfortable with. I think I'm fearful of I think I've heard Darren Brown talk about this before, the look at me thing. Like when I do sort of organic magic, it's very sort of like, you're on, mate, and we'll just be chatting and something happens. Yeah. So it's, yeah. So, yeah, and I'm very conscious. When I went out the other week, I actually did that click where I went into like, I'm on the table at Blackpool. So I went from like, I'm talking now quite monotone and then hi. And there was this huge change in my, I've got a lot to learn there and actually finding my style. When I do courses in tennis, I feel very comfortable and relaxed. So it's a natural thing. So yeah, that's where I'm at with my performance. It's, I don't feel comfortable yet with my performance style. I think this is where I'm at.
That's interesting. That's cool. But it hasn't stopped you creating, which is amazing. And as we carry on, I'd like to know. Well, actually, I'll ask it now before I want to get back to the timeline. But let me ask you a question now. I always find as a creator, when I create magic, my final part of it, once I've got something that I feel that is good, I spend like 6 months just performing it over and over and over again at gig after gig after gig after gig after gig to work out every single little thing. And generally, as a rule, when I start performing it over and over again, it becomes way better after a few months than it is when I first go into it. So as somebody who doesn't perform as much but still creates a lot of magic, do you feel that, like, how do you compensate for that? Or have you kind of tuned yourself into a case where, right, okay, I've got this creation, it's fine? Or do you go out and perform it socially, or do you have other, like, what's your process?
It's a complete mixture depending on what I'm working on and what the product is or what it is. Because I've got some sleight of hand stuff, you know, that I haven't released, you know, like most, but I've got a various range of different, so it really depends on what it is. And it's changing, and that evolves and changes. So I would say in the beginning days, it was obvious that if I had an idea or a concept, I needed to get that into the hands of a real working magician as quick as possible for them to work it, or maybe more, and to help me routine. So that's how I used to approach that. Even now on projects, I would work in that way. Like we'll get onto other projects, but Illusionist and with Bitcoin, the value of that project isn't just my work, it's all the other people that I've now collaborated with that have added value to that project. So I think the lesson I've learned over magic is probably once you have a refined idea, a solid idea that is an idea, share with the right people. And I think that's healthy for any product. The more minds can see a good product, the more ideas, because what I've noticed as well is most magicians, this is how it should work. You'll get a prop, or if we're talking gimmick magic especially, and you should take that and do your own thing with it. You don't need to follow the routine normally, or you can take aspects and everyone presents in there. The real professional working magicians that have had some of my stuff, what they do with it is astounded me and amazed me, because it's not how I would approach the prop. And that, I think that's just, I love that. That's one of my favorite things about creating, is actually seeing other people take my creations or ideas and do something else with them. Because that's how things evolve and keep moving. So yeah, and that's what art is, isn't it? No one uses a paintbrush in the same way.
Perfect. Yeah, I totally agree with you. But on that, before we get back to the timeline, I totally agree with everything that you've said there. One question is, how do you make sure that your ideas aren't going to get ripped off? Because I've seen it happen. Many times. You know, I mean, what do you do about that? If your idea is to show it to as many people as possible, and I agree with that as well.
No. I'm not advising anyone to show their ideas to everyone as possible. Let me make a well-rounded, defined idea. So pretty much a product. Once you've got that product, then go and show it.
Got it.
Yeah, not the rough idea. The rough ideas keep to yourself and share with your close circle of people you trust. And the only way to know that is to a bit of live and learn, Craig, because like you say, we've all been there. My advice there is have a circle, keep it small, keep it tight. And also, even with your circle, try and make sure the ideas are as rounded as possible before you present them, because as you know, you've probably been on jams. And also one thing I've learned recently is with friends, know when you're talking about your work, their work you're doing together. That's really important for magic creators. Very, very important. I even go as far as if Jared Manley is a good friend, but if Jared does any design work or anything for me, I will pay Jared for that work. that, and he's a friend. One, you should pay your friends for work. I don't know why people expect mate rates from friends all the time. But yeah, that makes, that means that that's still then your project. Jared actually gave me that advice. And Jared is very well known, as you probably know, in the industry for consulting and stuff. So so that was some of the best advice I ever got. Actually, pay your friends. If you consult with friends on certain projects or you need their expertise for certain things, pay your friends for their expertise. I think that's very
great advice. Really great advice. So back to the back to the timeline. So you've just bought Juicy out. It's your third product, really. Yeah. Second, third. What happens then? So now are you, so you've just bought three products out. You've been a little bit by Tao. I imagine it was a limited run with Juicy, but you know, you now realize that there is a market for your creations at least. You know? So is now, are you now thinking, okay, this is a potential business, this is a potential income stream?
I thought that this is, like a lot of things I've done in life, I thought this is potential where I can have a hobby I love that could pay for itself at minimum. And I'd sort of looked around, and from the few experiences I had with the releases at that time, didn't have any aspirations of actually this being. I looked at it from a pragmatic point of view. And at this point, I started to balance my time as well and thought, well, I'm spending all this time on magic. From a money out point, in point of view, it's not. Think so, and I had other businesses and other things to attend to, so I had to actually realign myself, because like you can get carried away in magic, you can, you know, especially with creation of knights and stuff. So but the black pool that Juicy was released was a turning point, a huge turning point. So I spent a day on the stand with Saturn, which was a great experience, you know. Just no, actually, I don't think I spent the day on the stand. I just went over and did a couple of hours. Jester Styles, Tom was there at the time, and he was demoing Juicy when it was first released. And I say Costas was there, so he gave me a copy of the finished CGI. But the biggest thing that happened to me that black pool is 2 days prior, I'd come up with a trick idea. Like literally, the 2 days just prior to black pool, this idea came, I made it, and you know, you asked about like sometimes do you work, do you do? All I knew is that this trick worked and I needed to show Eric Jones. That was my, at the time, he was like a big, you know, I'd reached out to Eric and showed him the video and he actually got back to me and we communicated, which I thought was cool. So I took this trick and I had CGI, but all I wanted to do was show Eric. And I remember watching Eric after his, I think he lectured, and then I watched him at his table for 2 hours while I was waiting to speak to him. And I think he sold out in 2 hours, Craig. It was the most beautiful thing I've ever seen from a dealer point of view. Just so smooth. He had two things, a big crowd. He was on the balcony. But then I spoke to Eric and I showed him this trick and I fooled him with it. And he told me, like, and then I messed up, actually. I revealed, just as I was finishing the trick, I revealed the method, which was actually a great learning point. But that was the moment. That was, like, this huge moment for me, because I've just shown Eric Jones a coin trick, in essence, and fooled him with it, and he liked it. So that was huge. That was like, wow, okay, so I can actually make decent magic. At this point, I don't think, I was just still a bit like, eh. And luckily then Costas come over and give him a copy of CGI, which helped, you know, bang, and he really liked that for the visual. So that was a huge turning point. It was just really nice, giving me motivation that I was actually creating magic. So that gave me a great creative surge. And I think shortly after that, I met up with Eric when he did the come over to the UK. It was just before he did AGT. So we came over to the UK to do a lecture tour. So I was looking up, I went to see him at the Birmingham Magic Society, then at Wolverhampton, and then I met with him and Mark Laval in Birmingham for a night out, and then they invited me to go to his Magic Circle lecture, which was the first time I'd been to the circle. But that this whole process, because that day itself was huge, because I met Jared during that trip. And Jared really just, that opened up my eyes to even more in magic. For those who don't know, Jared has released many effects. He's also a consultant of magic, but he also, his main career is within the special effects industry. Yeah. Worked on some seriously very large projects. I'm not going to say, because I don't know what his deals are or stuff like that. But So just meeting him, we had similar interests, and he just opened my mind to a lot of other ways that you can create magic and get things done. And we started working on a product that you are well aware of, but that was the this is 8 years. This was the first 2 weeks. So anyway, that was meeting Jared, and that's where that product started.
Is that the Black Ops watch? Is that what you fooled Eric with?
No. But Eric was the first person I ever showed the Black Ops watch, like 6 years before it was released. So he's been aware of the Black Ops watch for many, many years. No, the one I showed Eric, the one I showed Eric actually comes back up because I think originally he was going to do it through Lost Art Magic, but I think he got AGT and situations changed there. Mm-hmm. So that trick that I showed Eric, which is very old for me, it's probably my most passionate trick, is actually the one that's my last at the moment, from when I met Lloyd and the original tricks I signed with Illusionist, it's the next one, or my last one I've got in the works at the moment. So it's not far up. A few months. So I believe, although things might change, I believe Eric will be involved in that project. Although I'm hoping to do a little bit myself on that. I've gained a bit of confidence, but especially from a tutorial point of view. Other than that, I can't really say too much on that effect because, like the secrecy.
So you're more confident now. You're rubbing shoulders with people like Jared and Eric. You're becoming more known within the industry.
I did quite a bit of social media stuff, so a bit of consulting for some people. Again, I'm not going to say who, because I did sign like NDAs, and I think if you do that type of work, you shouldn't do it. You know, that you're creating or you're working with someone to create something for them. So that's what you do. But yeah, I worked with a couple of social media people that have got quite a big following on social media. That was a good experience. So 2017 did quite a bit of that. That was just good to learn about social media magic and how it works and how it was a totally different style of creation as well. Not just the magic, but the actual how it was viewed, because your audience isn't magicians. Your audience is a very large number of people, and you're fighting algorithms and all sorts of things that you, again, like pretty much the same as what you were saying about a working magician having to make sacrifices in his art or their art. I think there's a little bit of that in social media. That would be my personal thing. Possibly some people, not maybe. But yeah, that was a good, really good experience. I enjoyed that. Got to do a bit of UK traveling, you know, doing some stuff. So that was really cool. I'm just following my notes. So that was pretty much, 2017. Yeah, and then 2018, I actually went and worked on the stand at Saturn for the whole weekend. And did juice.
Have you still only had one trick out with Saturn at this point? Or?
Yeah. Still juicy. So I think it was like soft release at Blackpool the previous year, and as I say, it wasn't very heavily advertised, I don't think, and we only did a small run. So but yeah, so I went and did the stand that year. So that was my first actual time performing on the stand, but I was doing just a few of the things from juicy, not a full routine with it really, you know, just showing doing it as a bit of a more of an organic piece. But it was a good experience, and I thank Mark for giving me that experience. You know, obviously put me on a table, and I demoed a couple of their other effects as well, like Out of the Blue. That was quite a good effect. That was a good experience. And then that's Mark. That was the setup there. There was no other plan there really. Mark said, like, you've got juicy, do you want to come to the stand? We'll cover Blackpool for you, and it'll give you some experience. So that was the reason for that really. That was a good positive experience. But that Blackpool, I actually met, although I'd met him before, I actually had a sit down with Sean Dunn from Penguin for the first time. And I did actually sign a couple of tricks with Penguin they actually got to film. They were filmed, but I think there was some people leaving the company, and I think with COVID, I'm not too sure, it was actually before COVID, but after COVID, they just never materialised. Which in hindsight was actually a really good thing, because one of those effects in particular, I've got the rights back to Juicy now, and there's another effect that Penguin like that actually just, they gel, they like go together. So right. There's actually a bigger project now, and there's another effect So Juicy 2.0 is definitely something that's on the horizon, but a big set for magicians with a full working routine. And some, I actually had a few more ideas. So that's probably something I'm definitely going to progress over the next year, I think.
Okay. That's amazing. So what was your next release at this point? So you've still released three tricks.
So at this point, mate, I decided I wasn't going to release any magic. I didn't feel it was viable. I thought the time I was spending on it, I enjoyed magic and I didn't want it to become something. So I'd lessened off a little bit the amount of time I was spending on magic. I had other commitments and stuff to deal with and wasn't doing as much. And generally was going to, I had this idea of just writing a book and then putting all my ideas in this book from the last how many ever years. Because I'd done the same. I'd sent a few things off to different companies, other ideas, and, you know, sometimes I'd never hear back, and sometimes, so I liked magic, but I wasn't going to do anything. That was pretty much where I was with it. And then I had a friend that I'd met at Blackpool, a young lad I haven't spoken to him for a while after. So Dean Gaffney, if you do happen to watch this, you're right, dude. He's not a magician. He was an amateur magician and just someone I used to chat with. And I trusted him, so I'd share ideas with Dean and like just get his reactions. But we met up at Blackpool 2019, and this was another pivotal moment, because I was going to walk away from magic, but I had a few things on me. And Dean says, "Hey, he loved Illusionist, and I loved Lloyd. I thought Lloyd was like a great creator, but I loved Lloyd's videography and the way he presented. So I'd always wanted to do something with Lloyd. So." We was at Blackpool, and Dean, I don't normally have a drink, but I got a bit of Dutch courage and actually got the courage to go up and introduce myself and show Lloyd some magic. And that was really another big, big change. I mean, I'll show you the thing in this. This is how it went. So like, you're right, Lloyd, would you like a drink from the bar? And he was like, yeah, I'd love one, bro. I was like, oh, here you go, mate, you can have one of these. Just took the drink out of the wallet, and that was me and Lloyd introduced. And then I showed him the same trick I showed Eric. So that was the trick that really sort of did it for me with Illusionist. But I still think pulling the shot glass out was the thing that did it. So that was a huge moment. I was pretty much not going to do anything. And then met Lloyd. We chatted at Blackpool, went to the Illusionist party, met G. And then I met Lloyd in Cardiff a few weeks later and just took a load of stuff, filled a table full of magic, and we went through it all and said, what would you like? And he went, that, and just pointed at it. Like, I think I ended up putting a box of 16 effects together for them originally. Wow. That sent to Lloyd. And then the normal process, obviously things take time with magic, but then a lot of things happened during the whole process of me being signed to release some stuff. Lloyd left Illusionist. And then our original plans changed, the products we was going to do. So that was really the revamp. I sort of showed Lloyd stuff and Illusionist were interested and decided to do a couple of releases, well, a few releases with Illusionist. And that was sort of, that revamped me to sort of...
And how many have come out through Illusionist? I can only really think of the Black Ops watch.
So the first one was Practical Coining Can, which is super cool, mate. Like, especially for the UK market.
I think that blew over my head. I'll have to check that out.
Yeah, it's available as a download. It's on Magic Stream, and it's also available as a download on the main site. I do, when I'm at conventions, I didn't have it when I was at Blackpool this year, but I do sell a practical version of it, a made-up version. But it's super, super easy to set up. Really good party trick for amateur magicians. Kieran Johnson's used it a few gigs. David Penn said, I think they reviewed it on The Wizard. He said he'd use it. It's very much a street special magic trick. Like, if you can imagine, Brian Trix did the trailer. He absolutely knocked it out of the park with the performances. The reactions in the trailer, Craig, are insane. And it's a simple coin and can trick. You know, but it happens in their hand. That's the difference, because people, the minute you bring out a coin and can, you get compared to Wayne Hutchin and different people's various coining cans. This one is practical in the sense, but it happens in their hand. They feel the moment when the coin goes in. So that's the bit I like about it. And it's pretty fail safe. That's the other good thing about it. Yeah, that's Practical Coining Can. I love that trick. And then, yeah, Black Ops Watch. I mean, Black Ops Watch for me is, I mean, that story alone could probably fill a 10-hour special, give creators so much advice on product development. I have probably 10 different versions of Magic watches that do a similar thing. All sorts of different designs to different functions that's, you know, could be considered cool. But what makes this one very special is the actual, it's the most refined commercial version of the effect that wouldn't have happened if it wasn't for that relationship with Jared Manley. Like, that was a huge piece to that puzzle of how it was actually developed. But yeah, very hard product to get to, like I said, years and years, sitting down thinking, should I release this? It's just a coin vanish. Speaking with coin workers and magic. But what I can say is I'm proud of the product. It looks, I mean, I used to wear the prototype for 2 years and no one ever called me, but I wear it every day. The one thing that I didn't mention in the tutorial, which I wish I had, of is actually my personal, apart from the vanish, is my personal uses for it. So, and I've actually showed this to Ben Earl now, and I've got his feedback, so I can actually say this. I use it to do Ben Earl's back in time routine. Because the action of holding the wrist is justified in the routine when you repeat it. And that's how I use it. I would say it's a very situational piece of magic. Yeah. As well. Like, it has its times and its moments. It's not something you're going to use in a working set. But it also comes from the idea, I mean, we're British, so you know what people are like with sleeves in the UK. I always use Joshua's vanish. So I thought, well, and that's what got me thinking, really, how else can I use the prop? I'm doing this vanish. Could I have another vanish there or something? So it was an expansion on that. And it's also based on an idea from Bobo's, where you actually load the coin underneath the watch. Mm-hmm. That makes sense.
Yeah.
And that was my inspiration for the actual effects, was just I got a copy of Bobo's the first weekend.
And it came out, I mean, obviously, you were talking about working with Illusionist for Meet Lloyd in 2018, but it never came out. Until after the 2008, but it never came out until after the pandemic. I remember people talking about it at Blackpool 2021, which was the first Blackpool back, and it had been released just before 2021. So you've got like a 3 or 4 year period there where Illusionist had said, "Yeah, we want to work with you," and it hadn't.
Well, it was 2019 when I first met Lloyd. And then it was, what is it? Because it was the 2021 Blackpool that wasn't open. So it was, it come out.
Are you sure? Oh, yeah. Well, yeah, you're right. Yeah, sorry.
Yeah, I know. Mate, that's why I wrote all these names. So I couldn't remember myself. So it was 2019 I first met Lloyd. Then 2020, I went to Blackpool. I didn't go in because COVID was a thing and we hadn't gone into lockdown. I remember saying to G and Lloyd, I'm not going into the convention, but I'll come to the party and like catch up. I just caught up for them for a Nando's for the day, stayed over one night, but I didn't want to go into the Winter Gardens because COVID was, and I think it was like two, three weeks later, we was in lockdown. So that was then. So there was a year we had sort of progress meeting at that Blackpool. But then obviously everything else happened in the world and the sort of world shut down. I met up with...
Was COVID and lockdown the main reason for it taking so long? Because one thing I say to creators, new creators, people that want to create, is you would not believe how long it takes.
Yeah,
I think that's the big thing, right, James, that people don't realise. Yeah. Like, you cannot possibly realise when you become a creator how long it takes to go from... a finished idea to it hitting the shelves. I've been working with Murphy's now for 2.5 years. I've had two products coming out, but there's 10 in active development.
Yeah, I would say the minimum would be 2 years, wouldn't it, really? Like, for any creators watching or young people that want to get into it, like, from actually getting your idea signed or, yes, we want to do this, to actually think. Because it's not only that, you have to remember the larger companies have a massive backlog of effects and work, so they're taking an idea on the top of other ideas, and especially with the backlog from what happened in the world with COVID, a lot of things are now manufactured in China, and there's a massive backlog and delay, which I think now is just starting to trickle through for the larger companies, from what I'm aware. So that would be So yeah, but it is a long process and it does take time, and you have to be know and understand that in that time your ideas could be released by someone else, or that has actually happened to me 2 or 3 times. You know, I've had projects that have been tied up with a couple of companies that have been tied up so long that I've seen them released. I saw one this year at Blackpool and it was really bloody good. It was really good, you know what I mean? But like, it was the same thing I created, 7 years ago?
Yeah.
And sometimes you just got to go, okay. It's like, at least you, but I think the thing with independent creation, stuff like that, is it happen. I mean, I have that happen so much. And there's certain magicians I've spoken to, we can go into this in a bit as well, because there's certain magicians I love, respect, and love as friends, but it's actually really dangerous for me to talk to them for too long, because we are so alike that they've, and you know, when you've got half an idea that you've been working on, but then someone tells, and you don't want to be that person, oh, I'm working on that as well, because that's, you get that a lot in magic, don't you? So there's a lot of that. So just be prepared that it does take a long time, and that other people can release that idea and beat you to market if that's what you want to do. And that happens a lot to a lot. And the more creative you are, the more that will happen.
Yeah.
It's really common. And yeah, really, really common. I mean, the reason I don't mess with cards at present, so the first 2-3 years, I did a lot of card gimmicks and ideas. But I was, I was racing the first year or so in magic. Every idea I had, this is brilliant, I've just come up with something. And then I'd look, Sans Mind had done it. Okay, so I was literally, I think I had 7 ideas that were Sans Mind releases. I even had 2 that I'd come up with that they come up released after. So I was just like, and then I realized going to a convention, there were so many people working on cards that are amazing, like from sleight of hand to gimmicks to everything together. I thought, for my limited time in magic, I don't think it's an area I should really focus, because I could be, my time could be better spent elsewhere helping other areas. Yes, that's why I don't do.
So here's a question for you. You've obviously, we're kind of almost up to date now, because obviously you bought out the stuff through Illusionist. I don't think you bought anything else through Saturn, did you? None of the others that we're missing. It was like basically Magic Tail, Saturn, Illusionist. That's kind of the progression that we had there.
Yeah.
So here's a question for you. This year, you had your own stand, and I think you did the year before as well. So
yeah.
So when we came out of the pandemic, 2021, you had your own stand. Yeah. No. Yeah. 2022, you got your own stand. 2023, yeah, you got your own stand. What made you decide to start releasing stuff like Bitcoin yourself? Because you've told me the story, you've said, hey, I worked with Magic Tao and I didn't really get paid that much. I worked with Saturn and it was a great experience, but it was a limited run. It wasn't worth the amount of time that I put into it. I got signed with Penguin, but nothing materialized from it. I worked with Illusionist. Stuff still hasn't come out and it took years for it. Did it come about as a result of frustration? Just like, I'm sick of this happening over and over again. I'm going to control myself.
There's a small element of that, but obviously there's magic companies that I want to work with, love and work with. And so it wasn't really that. There is more control if you do something yourself, because I think what happened with Bitcoin really was a change in my circumstances. So I've had a limited construction company for 20 years with my father, as well as other businesses. And I'm a single parent of 2 kids that have just gone to uni. So I'm in I've closed the construction business down with my father because he's retired and I didn't want to carry it on. So I'm in this, I've got a small window in my life at the moment where I can actually devote some time to magic for the next year. So I was going to go down the company road with Bitcoin, but then I had a change of heart, and it wasn't a monetary change of heart, because I think I could have done better going through the company the offers I'd had. It was with Bitcoin. I love making things, and I've got this time. So one, I wanted to see if I could generate a way to spend some time crafting your magic. So that was one thing. 2, it was something I could actually make. I didn't need anyone to produce Bitcoin. It's something I could actually make to a very high standard, and I was happy with that. And really what also with Bitcoin is I don't want it to be a flash in the pan. So I think it's, I honestly think it's a really strong trick. I don't want to blow my own trumpet, but I do think it's a strong utility gimmick and routine. And I'd like to see it be a piece of magic that's still relevant in 10, 20 years, maybe, if the prop is still a relevant thing.
Yeah.
So part of it was, I just wanted to release it in smaller quantities to keep it more special, if that makes sense.
Yeah, it does make sense.
I don't want it to be, I think I mentioned, I don't want to sell 10,000 of these things. I'd like the people who buy it to buy it and know that they're going to use it and it won't sit in a drawer, because I spent a lot of time making each one. So that was really, and it's also a weird product, right? Because I ended up putting so much stuff in it that it's quite costly to make. So I can't afford, like, as someone who looks at this as a side project, I don't want to throw a load of money into it. So only making small batches is safer for me. That makes more sense. It keeps it small and it keeps it more special for the people that have it. So I think it was a mixture of all those things combined is the reason I actually did Bitcoin. The other reason is if this is another thing for people looking into magic, for creators. And I think people think creators make so much money from magic, but they don't realize, again, the business structure. So if you sell a trick to a wholesaler or to someone on that, you're either going to be getting a buyout royalties, or if you're a producer, a wholesale price, which is a reduced cost of the unit price, so everyone else can make their money. Bitcoin would work. I would have to up the price of the product so much that I don't think, you know, I mean, I wanted to make a value product for people, that covers my time to make it, but that's what I'm covering. If I did it for a wholesale, I'd have to drastically increase the price. And I don't want to do that. I want it to be an affordable price, but for people that really want to buy it. So that was the Bitcoin is just, I see as a, it's just a really, it's such a personal project. And I just wanted to try and keep it that way. So that was the real reason for doing it myself. I had this moment in time when I could devote some time to making it. And I just wanted to control the project a bit more with that one. I also had some ideas, like from working with all these companies and taking notes, there were some ideas like that I wanted to do. Like with, with Bitcoin, you vastly helped me out and made a professional tutorial for me. But in the last week, I've started to get tutorial experts from different people I've sent the gimmicks to. So Doug Kahn and Harry Harrington, Chris James, they've all added, they've all filmed tutorials that have been added to the tutorial reels now. It's just amazing. I don't think I would have been able to do that. That's the one thing I don't think I would have been able to do as much of with working with a magic company. It's harder to reach out to more people because through the magic companies, they feel that they're going to have to pay a lot more fees to different magicians to get them involved. Yeah. Whereas if you reach out personally, you're reaching out personally to someone, so it's a bit different. So I just wanted to keep it a bit more smaller and try and, I'm a big fan of Jeff Price, and spoke to Jeff at Blackpool when I first showed Bitcoin. And I think the way he's gone about his model and setting up his store, Monkey's a very relevant trick, 5 years on, I think it may even be a bit longer. So it should be because it's a great trick. But so that's sort of where I aimed for Bitcoin, was just I don't want to release every idea I have through my own store or do that independently. I have, ideas that sat there for various companies that I think would fit them, and I'd like to work with as many people in magic. Again, I've done consulting in other industries, so I'm very much being friends with Jared and the skill set I had. I'd love to do some consulting work at some point in the future on other projects. So
it sounds to me like you're really you said you've got this window of period of time for about a year where you can focus on magic. It seems like you're putting together long-term plans here. Like you're talking about wanting to work with multiple different producers, bringing your own tricks out, consulting on other projects. Is this something that now that your construction business is kind of not as prevalent in your life, is this something that you're wanting to do long-term? Because you just said like, I've got a year, but like, it sounds like you've got.
I think that I've got a year where I can really focus on setting some stuff up and progressing some things. And I think I'll be releasing magic, and I'm at the process now where I'm starting to write a lecture and a book. That's currently where I'm at, the very early process of that. So there's definitely, I will think I'll be doing, if I was to release a couple of tricks a year with the material I have, I'd have enough to retirement. So that's okay. So I definitely will stay in magic. I don't think magic will become my sole or only focus or income. I have too many other interests and other things that I do for that to be. The change that I'm going through now, it will probably involve a move to a different, maybe even a different country, the way it's going. I've got family in Northern Ireland and I'm currently in England. So I don't fully know. I know that I will, Bitcoin will be there forevermore, hopefully, for people. That's the plan. And I will add products to the site. And I will hopefully release tricks for other companies as well and do other stuff in magic, like work with other people. I definitely want to be involved in around magic, but I don't think it will ever become my full-time job. No, just knowing myself.
Yeah, well, let's ask a couple of questions about creating. How do you decide which company to put? You say that, hey, I want to work with as many companies as possible. How do you decide whether to bring something out yourself or to bring something out through a company? And how do you decide which company to work with? Is it a case of the first one that says yes, or are you wanting to approach a particular how do you approach that?
I think that would change depending, from my point of view. I can give you my answer and say that I think it would depend on the person and the trick. So from my point of view now, I have certain tricks that I've sat down. I no longer feel like I actually have to approach a magic company to sell anything. So I can show someone an idea if I like, and they might like it. But I just think, I've got a couple of tricks that are sat over there that I know are definitely Penguin releases. They just feel like Penguin Magic releases. There's another couple of things I've got that I haven't shown yet, but I definitely know are Illusionist or Fury 11 releases. They just fit their image, the feel of them. So I think you just know, depending on what it is. And then certain magic companies have their own style or feeling. They don't like certain things. And that's their, it's their business, so they're allowed to have their own preferences that way. I just think you just know, basically. And then from whether you release it yourself, I mean, that's whether you release a trick yourself, I don't think it's just dependent on the trick. It's whether you have the capability to release a trick yourself. So that's from making the finished product, whether it be a download or a physical product, quality that it is releasable, and then having the structure and network to actually deliver on that promise when people are placing orders and supplying orders. That's just as much, if you're going to release a product, a part of the process of producing the trick. So it's whether you can actually produce the trick yourself, produce a tutorial that is good enough for people to learn the trick. I don't think tutorials always have to be the highest of quality. Like we're sat now, I think this setting is quite adequate to teach magic, but like, as long as the teaching is clear and concise. But it's nice. Don't get me wrong, it's very nice to have snazzy stuff when you can have it, but that stuff will normally come at a cost. So it's, and again, so I don't think there is any formula. I think it's going to be subjective, because if you're someone new and you have an idea and you want to reach out, you're probably just going to reach out to everyone and everyone, or your favorite magic company, and you might not even hear back or get rejected. And you do have to remember, magic companies, you know people in the industry more than most, Craig, they will receive hundreds, if not thousands, of emails and idea submissions a week. And that's a lot. So there will be stuff that's missed. There will be stuff that is so close or similar to something else, although you might think you've created something new. It might be new, but it might be something that would be better suited in a lecture than it's, per se, in that's the other thing that I think I've got ideas here now that I look at, and I think, well, they're probably more suited to a lecture than release. And so as a creator, I think, look ahead. Like, if you're going to be, if you want to be a magic creator, at a certain point in your journey, you're going to look at the other avenues in magic that can help you promoting, and lecturing is a huge part of that journey that I'm just starting to, I've started shadowing Harry Harrington at a couple of lectures and seeing how the lecture scene works, because that's a great way to promote product, build confidence, and it's a different style of creation. So yeah. I think young creators should look at that. don't just come up with one idea and try and sell that idea. One thing I did with Penguin, and I'll be completely honest here, is I think I showed Sean 5 ideas, but they were my least favorite ideas. My personal least favorite ideas, because I hadn't released anything with Penguin myself or done any business with them. So I'm not going to give away my best magic straight away. Let's work. So not saying it was my worst magic either. It was good enough. You know, they got to see the magic. But I think don't just come up with an idea, come up with a few ideas and then evaluate and rate your own ideas. Like, is this a release? Is this one? You'll start to look at products differently as well. Like, when you create a product, you have to look at it from not just the magic side, you have to look at the practicality of producing it.
Yeah,
the cost of making something is like this watch, for instance, the best version of this watch, you couldn't afford it. It couldn't be about, well, you could, but it wouldn't be a magic product that most people could afford. It would be about $600. And I'll tell you, it would do some amazing things, but it's for a Vanish, it's just not practical. It's not marketable. Whereas a $30 watch is very, very practical. So there's all that side of magic as well. I love that side of the creation is having the rough idea, but then refining that's an idea, no matter how simple, to a releasable product that, you know, that isn't going to break on people, bits aren't going to fall off. Even I had, I was looking at Blackpool to be next door to the puppeteer stand, Joe Peak, absolutely amazing young guy. We had a 4-hour conversation on glues and adhesives from a creation point of view. Because I knew that was the guy to talk to about glues and adhesives, because he was doing some amazing puppetry, you know, crafting, and the stuff I learned in those conversations that were helped with magic was invaluable. So it's little things like that. And again, most people would walk past that stand if they're into coin magic and not think there was value in the puppets, but there was huge, for me as a creator, there was huge value. So big shout out to Joe, I love you, man. His puppets are amazing, Craig. If anyone, amazing, just like, just truly, it was his first Blackpool this year. I was so proud of him. He blew it out of the park. It was amazing.
That's great. That's amazing.
So I think I answered that. I can't
yeah,
quite
you
remember.
Did. Yeah, you did. And then so let's talk about the big question, the one that I know that anybody who watches this video will hope that I ask you, which is dealing with burnout and not being able to come up with ideas. You've just turned around to me and said, hey, I've got enough ideas that for at least 2 a year for the, you know, I'm going to be in the dark, which is amazing. However, one thing that you have to do as a creator is constantly working on the next thing. You're only as good as your last release. And so I've spoken to creators in the past and they've been like, oh my God, I got burnt out. I couldn't create. I sat there and I got really frustrated. Nothing would come into my head. And I thought, well, maybe I've lost it. Maybe I don't have it anymore. Do you ever experience creative burnout? Do you ever experience like something like that? And have you got any advice on the subject for people that are trying to create, whether it's their own trick to release or whether it's just something they're trying to do for themselves?
I'd say magic, I haven't experienced creative burnout, but I know there's reasons that I can talk about why I don't think I do. One is I'm very much idea onto the next thing. So what I tend to do, this isn't with everything, but I tend to come up with an idea. If I can make it, prototype it, or do anything to just get the idea out of my head, draw it, it doesn't matter if it's a scribble, get it out of the head, it's in a page. I could come back to that idea in 3 years, next week. It doesn't really matter, depending on what it is. If it was something that I thought, yeah, this needs to be something I'd really focus on. So that's one way I do it. I like going back to ideas. I think taking a gap from an idea, especially, and magic, we'll get to that, but taking a gap from an idea is really healthy for the idea, because you'll get that fresh perspective. Forcing creativity doesn't work. Like sitting there and actually, like, you can sit down and problem solve or work on a certain thing, but sitting and going to go and create magic, that's, to me, that wouldn't work as a process. It would if there was an idea. So from a consulting point of view, this is what we want to achieve, there's your jumping off point. But just to say, blank canvas, I'm going to create something, I think that's a bit of a when people say that's how I do it. But what I do is I just like to do lots of different things. Most of my ideas come when I'm not actually practicing magic. So they'll come when I'm doing other jobs, other things, washing up, driving the car, when the brain's just generally going. And most of my stuff is influenced, I hope, with the exception of the coin stuff, from stuff outside of magic. So I try and, yeah. So creatively, I just keep moving and working on different things. So if I thought, this idea of hit a bit of a block, I'd just put it down, either pick it and then pick up another idea that I haven't worked on for a bit and work on that. Or I'd go and make a bow and arrow because I like doing that. And you get what I mean? I just keep moving on to the next thing until, I've just had an idea for that. And then I'd go back. What I do sometimes is I leave 3 or 4 ideas or objects out on the shelf. I think I've heard of a creator say that as well. Because if it's in a drawer, you're not going to think about it. So I'll leave things that I know need development out. And as I walk past them, sometimes I'll just glance them and I'll be, let's just spend 5 minutes on that. And so I just like that approach. I think if you can sit down and the same, I've sat down sometimes and the next thing it's 5 a.m. and you've created this and I've done, what have I just done that for? So I don't think there's any set method, but what I like is a variety. I think if you have lots of things going on and lots of variety, and just don't be afraid to put something down for a bit and walk away. That's how I would approach it. So I don't tend to get creative blocks through that. And then also, if you are feeling like down creatively, just go and watch something else that's creative, someone else, either in magic or another art, or go and watch it. It's anything that gets you creative or gets you fired up in anything, and that will help you get creative again. Because
absolutely.
There's no easier way to get creative in magic than see someone else's work, because you'll get a flood of ideas yourself, like we all do when we see it. You could do it this way and this way. So not saying that's a jumping off point to create something, but that would definitely get you going. And I do have creative waves. Like I noticed after Blackpool this year, I normally have a wave after Blackpool, because you get to see so much stuff and then you process and then a load of stuff will come out. But that's carried on this year, like vastly, like it hasn't stopped. I've been chatting to Chris James a lot since Blackpool, and I actually had to say a couple of weeks ago, I've got to stop creating magic for a little bit, because I've got a website and Bitcoin and I've got this to do. It's like, I haven't really got the time now to think, but it was, yeah, but you don't want to stop it when it happens as well. So you can get creative runs, I think, like where you go get in the zone. And I definitely have had that for the last, like since Blackpool, a very like creative run to the point where I almost need to put some of these ideas away for a bit, because otherwise I'm going to keep working on them. So that's the other thing I think with creation. It's like any art, it can be messy and it can be time consuming. You can lose yourself in creation, I think, a bit more than most things.
You can.
I tend to do that. I'm normally quite organized and structured, and then magic has a way of messing up sleep schedule and stuff like that. So I do have to keep that in check. But good come at 2-3 a.m. as well. That's another thing. But I wouldn't recommend that to anyone. That's like be a bit sleep deprived. And just before you go to bed, sit back down and you'll normally have a crazy idea. that generally works for me. Not that I recommend that. So that normally comes when you're in a creative sort of mood, I think. I don't have any real set thing. I just I've always been fascinated with inanimate objects and just little things, like a stone would fascinate me. I love rocks and art, stuff like that. So I think just looking at things, and it depends that creativity. I'm very much, when I talk about creativity from a making point of view, but creativity doesn't just have to be that in magic, like sleight of hand and routining and scripting and all sorts of different ways to be creative. So I mean, if you look at the work of Darren Brown, as well as Darren, there's writers that are employed, that come from non-magic backgrounds. There's all sorts of things to be done in the world of magic. I think that's what's so great about it. It's so varied and vast. I think, and you can always be studying as well. Studying is another great way to get creative again. Just go and study something, can you? You might not be into mentalism, but delve into it and see whether there's anything there that might come over.
That's amazing. I got one more question. Two more, but this one big one, which is, I know this could be a subject that could go on for about 2 hours.
Right.
So we'll keep it simple. If there's one piece of advice you can give to somebody who wants to start creating their own magic, What would it be? Because I've spoken about this on the channel before, James. New people that come into magic, we tend to, rightfully or wrongly, we tend to put the creators on pedestals within this industry. Oh, I want to be the next Greg Wilson. I want to be the next Jay Sankey. I want to be the next Eric Jones. I want to be the next whoever it may be. And a lot of people that come into magic, when they first find out about this wonderful universe of everything that goes on, and they begin to realize how vast it is, they very quickly go, well, you know what? I want to create my own magic. That's what I want to do. So for somebody who's going down that route and they're new and they want to be a creator, what one piece of advice can you give them?
I think I touched on this earlier, and I think actually keep this as short as possible, one piece of advice, but I watched your 5x5 the other day, and I think the one thing is you'll never be the greatest Eric Jones, you'll never be the greatest Jay Sankey or Joshua Jay. You can be the greatest you. That's your words, Craig, I'm just quoting you. And I think I touched on it earlier. Although, yes, you want to be a magic creator, or create magic. Magic creators create magic. So if you want to create magic, and then you'll have magic that you've created. Then in my eyes, you are a magic creator, regardless of release or not. You're a magic creator if you enjoy making magic. And then when you've done that, because you enjoy it and you've researched magic and you're in magic, and then think about the process, the next step of actually going to companies or releasing something then. But do your research as well. Speak to other creators, ask them about the process. Before you take that step. Research companies, think, are they a good fit for me? I think people are so quick to, oh, I just want to get a trick out, an illusion, so I just want to have this. Think about your own development as well. And when you approach these companies, have your own thoughts. You know, they don't know everything, and you can have your own thoughts, and sometimes those are good things, especially on your work. That would be my one advice. Don't just want to be a creator for the monetary issue is really what I'm trying to say. People just want to think you're going to make a load of money, blah, blah, blah. Create magic because you enjoy creating magic. If you will then become a magic creator. And I think people tell you, and I think honestly, in this industry, people tell you when you're a magic creator, as opposed to you saying, I am a magic creator. You say, I create magic. Show it. The first 4 years, I used to just run around in conventions with a box of magic, hunting down really famous magicians to show them these gimmicks and magic things. I was someone who made magic, but I never said I was a magic creator. I think someone else gets to tell you that, and that's how it should be.
Yeah,
that's my advice there.
That's really, really
that doesn't good mean great though. It means you're someone who's making magic, and let someone else tell you you're a magic creator. Then you hear it, and you'll do that just by making magic. And that's what it's all about, isn't it? Enjoy it. If you know, don't. I want to be a creator. Put all this stress to emulate someone. Just create the magic you would create, and the magic will speak for itself. Like if you can create magic, people will pick things that are good, are seen, and if you've got good ideas, people will see them.
What's your process? Do you get inspired by things outside of magic? Do you look at a particular trick that somebody else has released and go, oh, this is great, let me come up with my own way of doing this? Or do you for me as the creator, right, one thing that and I've created a lot of magic, but let me give you a context. One thing that I've never been able to do is make a gimmick. I'm not a gimmick guy. You could sit me in a room with some double-sided tape, a pair of scissors, and a pack of cards, or whatever it is that a crafter needs. You could lock me in there for a month, and you'd come back and I'd just be in the corner dribbling. Then you take somebody like Lloyd Barnes and you put him in that room for 5 minutes, and he'd come out with 10 brand new gimmicks that the world's never seen before. My approach to creating magic isn't creating new gimmicks. It's taking something like the Invisible Deck and going, well, I'm going to take this in a completely different direction. And I know that different people have different processes. And sometimes I've spoken to other magicians that want to be creators and they get frustrated. They're like, oh, I can't make this gimmick like Lloyd Barnes can. And that's where I come from. Don't be the first boy. Don't be the next Lloyd Barnes. Be the first you. You don't have to be the guy that can take a playing card and some double-sided tape and make 15 card gimmicks. You don't have to be a Steve O. Watson. You don't have to be a James Keatley. You don't have to be a Lloyd Barnes. But like, what is there a particular process that you go through when it comes to creating an inspiration, or is it just literally?
Inspiration, I think, Craig, is just everything that you've ever done in life. I think that's literally where my inspiration comes from. I've been inspired when I see other tricks, other magicians' work. I try not to work on the similar premises when I see them from other people, because I think that's a bit rude if someone shares their work. You might have ideas. Sometimes I've seen people's work and had ideas and then gone back and said, oh, here's an idea, because I think that's lovely to do as well. That's sharing ideas and helping other people's magic grow. I've been trying to help a few people I've been meeting actually help them develop their products, you know, actually, not for my own gain, to help them. They've got these great ideas, but I'm quite good at the making side, so just giving them little manufacturing ideas and stuff. So I don't really have a process. I think I try and limit what I take, how much new magic I take in. So when I go to conventions, I very rarely go to all the lecture. I normally just do one lecture, because I find I can get overloaded with too many ideas. So I try and limit how much new stuff I take in nowadays. So I've definitely slowed off with taking too much new magic in. And I think that helps me, actually. Because otherwise the brain can go in too many different directions. I don't really have a set process. I think I'm just inspired by everything and anything. And I think once you've opened the doors to magic, like, I'll give you an example. So other hobbies, I think this is how my brain works. So I used to skateboard when I was younger. And then as I got older, I got into mountain boarding, which is a ridiculous idea. It's a big skateboard with off-road wheels, and you throw yourself down a hill and hope that you get great. Great fun. I've just recently stopped doing it now because I'm getting a bit older and I've had a few injuries and I should really be stopping. But when I was doing that, because all you need is a slope, you know, like skateboarding, you do a little trick on these objects and stuff. Everywhere I drove, everywhere I went in the world was a potential playground to do that. I had the board in the back, and anywhere I could see a little slope or drop that I could use to create or use that board or a trick, I would use it. So you're looking at the world as like a playground or as a piece of equipment to use for that. And I think it's the same with magic. There's magic everywhere. We do magic with objects and everyday things and with people. And those things are everywhere and all around us. So that's where I probably get inspiration. Everyday objects I'm a bit socially inept. So I think when I'm out, I can go in my own world as well and think about things and create things even when I'm chatting to people. So I think Lloyd's a bit like that as well. I think I think that helps me a little bit. But yeah, I don't particularly have a process. I don't think creativity is something you could particularly force, or at least that wouldn't work for me. I can study, I think that, and I think that happens. Again, sometimes study helps with creativity. You could be studying something and that could just end up. I was studying, I think, Eric's Image Etoile routine the other day. Which I think he used to call his opener, does it all his lectures. And the first move he does in that routine inspired Sirink the other day, actually. So it's just the first move he does to show the coins and then transfer all those coins. And that idea was like an inspiration to actually get me into something else. So it's I think it just comes from everywhere and anywhere. I think you just inspired, don't you? I think that you just that's cool. I know it's a very long-winded, but I think it's a weird thing. I think inspirations, I have an effect I come up with a few years ago that I was inspired when I was gardening. So I was actually planting some lettuces and the trip come, like, I was like, oh, okay, that could, yeah. And then so that's coming pretty soon. But so you can just get inspiration anywhere and everywhere.
That's great. And I've got one last question, final question. What's next? You've achieved so much. You've only been in magic for a few years. Let's be honest, if you could take a snapshot of what you've achieved in the last 8 years and say to a magician who's reaching the end of their career, hey, you could achieve this, they'll be like, yeah, I'm good with that. You've consulted with big names in the social media industry. You've created some of the best-selling tricks. You've worked with some of the biggest companies. You've got more ideas than most people have hot dinners. You had arguably the best trick of 2023's Blackpool. Like, you hit it out the park again and again and again. Is there anything left that you want to? I know you said that you've got big goals, which is amazing, but what specifically in, you know, is left on your magic bucket list that you kind of go, you know what, that I want to do that?
Okay, yeah, there's a few things, Matt. Do you want them all? So one is at some point I want to do a project with Lloyd. Lloyd, if you're listening to this, mate, I have project ideas. Just work on with me. I just want to have a project with Lloyd. That would involve
getting him on the phone. You get that right? That would involve actually getting him.
So I'd love to do something with Lloyd because that was part of the whole journey that I had. That I thought, you know what I mean. So I'd love to do something with Lloyd. I think for me, immediately going through the apprentice thing I'm doing is a big thing for the next year. I'm going to really put effort and energy into that and justify passing my exam. So I feel like that'll be a thing that'll give me confidence. And then a lecture and a book. So I've started penning a book over the last year. And what I'd like to do is basically will be my first 10 years of magic in a book. I actually have a working title, but I don't know. I think I need to try and find a way to approach someone to call it, but I'd like to call it Simply Keatley. And you probably know the word simply. Yeah, well, yeah. So that's what I'd like to call the book. And then part of that book will become a lecture. And I think that's what I'd like to do. I'd like to work on performance. And then maybe actually, because I've got this opportunity where I am now, is actually maybe travel around to the States and into Europe and meet different people in magic, and maybe use lecturing as a medium to do that. As I said, I've been a single parent on my own, and I haven't actually done all that much traveling in life when I was younger. So I think that's something I'd like to do. And I think magic could be a great way to travel and have some fun. I don't like taking holidays when I'm not doing anything. So I've had lucky enough with my other work to be able to travel with that. So I think that's something I can see magic might be able to do. So again, no aspirations to make millions in magic, but if it can help me travel a bit, that would be kind of cool. Awesome. And just meet people and learn more about the world of magic and, yeah, create more magic. Really just make more magic, Craig. That's really what it boils down to. It's all about, that's the thing, that it's making stuff. It's
like, about right, buddy.
Yeah. And then meeting you and going, hey, Craig, got this magic trick, and getting to go, wow, you know what I mean? That's what it's all about, isn't it? I actually went out, I did Bitcoin with Harry in Abergavenny in his residency. And the footage will be going up on the Vimeo, Jack Magic Vimeo page. And oh, man, I'm so proud. It's my I've had some great performances in it now, but this was one of my favorite. I think I've really got it there. Like performance wise, Bitcoin especially, I'm so confident with that trick now. So I've got some great performances the other night, which will be going up on socials and stuff soon.
Well, where can people reach out to you? Because obviously, traditionally, you've just bought stuff out through companies, but now you're developing your own web shop. You are going to be pushing that side of things more. I know because, I talked about Bitcoin very early on and on this channel. The amount of messages I get going, where can I buy it from? Where can I buy it from? I'd be a rich man if I had a pound for every time somebody asked me that. So where can people go and register an interest in Bitcoin? Where's your website? What are your socials? Tell me everything.
So Bitcoin is a new online store, which is jackmagic.com. So it's jakmagic.com. And it will be Bitcoin and Bitcoin Plus, which is a version of Bitcoin with an extra bit. That will be available on jackmagic.com. The email for that is info@jackmagic.com. So you can reach out to me about products and things related to Jack Magic there. Jack Magic also now has an Instagram, Facebook, and one of the products, Bitcoin, will also have a Facebook page. Which I'm working on with Chris James. So that will have a Facebook group for Bitcoin. But personally, you can just reach out. So I'm on Instagram. So that's Keatley Magic. So @KeatleyMagic. So you can DM me there. I'm also on Facebook and Messenger. So you can, through the normal social networks. I think I'm only on Facebook, Instagram. I'm not on any of the other social media platforms. So those are the main two. But I still have Messenger and DMs on Instagram. So yeah, those are the main ways. So Jack Magic will just be Bitcoin at launch. And then, yeah, if you want to contact me about anything else, just DM me or message me through Facebook.
Brilliant. Absolutely brilliant. So, and everyone should, because I know you've got some amazing stuff. I know some of the stuff you've got lined up this year, and it's going to be incredible. It really is. You've got a big 2023, 2024 ahead of you, James. You know, if people think that you've done a lot now, wait until they see what the next couple of years is going to bring. You're going to.
I just hope people enjoy the magic, and as I say, I think that's the other thing. Just to finish, like for people create that want to create magic, want to create it for, like, remember that you're creating magic for someone else. Ultimately, if you want to release a product, you're going to put it out there, and it's out there. Then, if you want it for yourself, you should keep it for yourself. So once it's out there, remember that people are going to use it different ways and different things, and be ready for that. But also, that's what it's about. Like, you're giving magic for other people to then go and show other people, to cause an experience, a moment, and that's so special. I mean, that's a really cool thing to think that. You've created something, and then that there's magicians that are actually working or creating moments for other people. I mean, it's like an extension of yourself. You could never reach as many people yourself, probably, unless you had a TV show or something like that. So I think that's really cool about creating. You should get to share your moments with other people through other people. I kind of like that.
Yeah, 100%. Absolutely 100%. Dude, this has been an incredible interview. Thank you so much. Like I said, you just bright. Thank you. You've had a really interesting journey in magic. And what's scary is you're just getting started, dude. You're just getting started. There's going to be.
It does feel, although, like, as I say, it's like, I think my 8 years in magic, or this is the 9th year. But yeah, it definitely feels like the last couple of years, or the last year especially, has really sort of changed. I think Lloyd used to say I was like an under. I heard the term actually going around with myself for a few years, like I was an underground magician or magician's best kept secret or something like that, which I don't like that. I don't think I'm that. I mean, at the end of the day, I'm just a guy who likes to make stuff and happens to like magic. That's how I view myself. But the underground magic, that used to make me laugh, actually, because I'm thinking, well, I can't be that underground if someone knows my name. but yeah, I love that.
Well, you're definitely going overground now, 100%.
Yeah. Not underground anymore.
Absolutely. So I want everybody to do me two favors. First of all, leave a comment down below, let James know what you thought of the interview. I thought it was amazing. And then secondly, go and jump onto Jack's Magic, go and check out the website, go and like all the socials, get on the mailing list, because everything this man brings out is great. And yeah, one more time, mate, thank you so much for being on the channel. I really appreciate it.
Been a pleasure. Thank you, Greg.
Guys, on behalf of James Keatley, I hope you enjoyed the interview. I sure as hell did. And I will see you again right here on Magic TV. I'm Craig. Here's James. Thank you so much.
Thanks, mate.
Thanks for listening to the Talk Magic Podcast.
Magic, magic.
Be
magic.
Sure to like and subscribe to the Magic TV YouTube channel.
Magic TV.
Which includes 14 unique videos every week. Whatever type of magic you're interested in, we've got you covered. Just search YouTube for Craig Petty's Magic TV, or click on the link in the description from this podcast below. Be sure to join us next Friday at 5 p.m. right here for another Talk Magic Podcast.